Hello, everyone. Thank you for all for joining us today with our live discussion here on the Economics Design Discord channel. My name is Ari Kimmelman. I'm an analyst with Economics Design. And today I have the great pleasure to be speaking with Ganesh Swamy, CEO and co-founder of Covalent. Ganesh, on behalf of the community and myself, thank you for joining us today.
Ari, such a great pleasure to be here and share some of the hardwood lessons in the world of crypto.
Very excited. So what we'll do for the next couple of minutes is, or for the next 40 minutes or so, is I'll ask you some questions about Covalent and how you build this project. And then additionally, I'll open up the floor to our guests here today to ask some questions as well. So to start us off, do you want to please introduce yourself?
Absolutely. So I'm Ganesh Swamy. I'm one of the co-founders of Covalent and currently act as the CEO. I have a background in data science and databases. I actually started my career in protein engineering. So this is creating cancer drugs using computer simulations. I pivoted out of that career after a couple of years because it took about 10 years to build an MVP. And most of my peers in the cloud and mobile and technology sectors were starting companies and going through acquisitions in 18 months or less. So I was kind of missing that fast pace. So I pivoted to the big data space. And for about a decade, I helped the whole movement of on-prem data warehouse deployments to the cloud and got very familiar with the data stack and so on. And about 5 years ago, I live in Vancouver, in Canada, British Columbia, and it rains a lot. And one rainy Saturday, a friend of mine told me about a database hackathon, and the two of us attended this hackathon, and I built the initial version of Covalent, and ended up winning that hackathon and starting a company to commercialize that technology. So that's really me in a nutshell. I'm very passionate about entrepreneurship. This is my fourth startup. I'm very passionate about databases, data, Web3, crypto, and the value that it provides to society. And generally, pretty passionate about a lot of things. So that's me in a nutshell.
Perfect. Okay. Very exciting story. So before we jump into a more in-depth conversation about Covalent, do you want to give us the basics of what is Covalent and why is it important?
Absolutely. So just to give you a brief summary of what Covalent is, Covalent stands for covalent bonds in chemistry, which is a homage to my background. So here we are trying to bind databases and blockchains, centralized systems and decentralized systems. You know, the analogy goes pretty far. But really the best way to understand Covalent is to imagine the world in about 5 years. And what we think will happen is there's going to be a multitude of blockchain systems up and running. This could be, you know, Ethereum 2.0. This could be one of the rollups like Arbitrum or Optimism. One of the zero-knowledge rollups could be one of the other layer ones. Could be Cosmos and its app chains or supernets or subnets or, all of these different settlement layers. What's clear is that these systems are here to stay, but the problem is users' data and assets is going to be fragmented across all of these systems. And so for a regular person, what they need is a way to pull out all of the data and the assets, and that's really what Covalent is building. So 5 years is still a long ways out. So if you scale back to 2023, what we've built today is a unified interface to pull blockchain data across dozens and dozens of blockchain systems. So what this does is we've taken all blockchain data, so scraped all blockchain data, normalized that into a unified schema, and then offer that schema and that data through a couple of products. And the first product we have is a unified API, which is a developer product. We have Increment, which is an analyst product. And then there'll be other products down the line. So that's really what Covalent is in a nutshell. So on one side, on the supply side, we index about 97 chains, and I think we're going to cross 100 chains before the end of the month. So this is 100 chains, including testnets, at your fingertips, that is all unified, all normalized, all schematized under the same same kind of data structures. And then you have the API products for developers. You have the analyst product for increment through increment and so on.
Wow, that sounds like quite a lot. I think that the most frequently used data analytics tool arguably is Etherscan. So if you could provide a little bit of a summary of how Covalent is both similar and different to Etherscan, I think that would allow our audience to really understand how Covalent works.
Absolutely. So Etherscan, I really respect the team there. They're, you know, true long-term builders. They're truly built, you know, one of the iconic projects in the space. So Etherscan and Covalent are similar in the sense that they surface blockchain data. And where I think that's where the similarity ends. Etherscan is meant for a retail user. It has a website, it has a UI, you can type in, you can search for stuff, and then in some places you can even interact with a smart contract. So it's that kind of interface. It's mostly meant for a technical retail audience. So it's a little more like hard to use. Covalent is a developer product. So the API is meant for integration into other tools. So Covalent doesn't really have a UI per se. And, you know, we have thousands of applications on the API. So if you use like Rainbow Wallet, for example, one of the more popular, wallets, all of that data comes from Covalent. Or you can use one of the NFT markets or one of the, you know, taxation tools. So we don't really have a UI. What we are is a building block to build, very compelling interfaces. I'm pretty sure someone has tried to build an Etherscan competitor on Covalent. I'm not sure how far they've gotten with it, but that's really what the key thing about Etherscan and Covalent is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I know within the Covalent ecosystems, there's different types of personas or types of actors that keep the network secure. Could you speak to how basically these mechanisms were designed within the ecosystem?
Absolutely. So, Ari, before I get to the decentralized network, let me just take a step back and put it in context and why we even need this. So the system that we had built for the first couple of years was a centralized system. So this is, you know, essentially everything is within the control of Covalent, the commercial company. And so we run all the RPC nodes, we run all the indexers, we schematize all of the data, and then we offer the API, host the API, and people can just, use that API just like any other like centralized API provider. You can think of it as Stripe or Plaid or any API. It's all the same. But, a few years down, I think it was around 2020, essentially before we had built the company, just the two of us, the two founders, we said, hey, why don't we build something more ambitious? Why don't we build this as a decentralized protocol and truly build this as a public good? Because blockchain data is public, and why not build something that is a public good? A set of validators who are running the blockchain nodes on the back end and do the cleansing, do all of the schematization, and then the demand side, the developers, essentially the applications, the dApps and the taxation tools and so on, they consume this data just like a centralized server. So it's like it appears like a centralized system, but it's actually decentralized on the back end. So in this role, essentially what we have is what is known as an ETL pipeline. So extract, transform, load pipeline, which is extracting data from a blockchain, cleansing it and schematizing it, done through a couple of actors. Now, what's unique about this data stack, which no one else has done so far, is that it's a proof-based data infrastructure, which means every step along the way, every extraction, every cleansing, every transformation has an associated cryptographic proof. So so the work is matched via a consensus. So if two actors were to do some work, and if the cryptographic proofs don't match, then you know that one of them is incorrect. And most times it's not a malicious actor, it's just data corruption. If you look at, in a traditional enterprise, a lot of the expense is where you have data corruption because of schema mismatches or upstream changes or downstream changes. So that's really what we're looking to solve. So in this system, essentially, we have people who are extracting data from blockchains. So these are people who run these full archive nodes of Ethereum and the other node systems, and they run the covalent patches to the node that extracts the data, and we call this format a block specimen, which is the canonical storage format that we've invented. And from there, we have a proof being uploaded. And from there, you have what is known as a refiner step, which is essentially a tracing engine. All the way down to the storage and the query nodes. So essentially, there are four nodes or four roles in this system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. A lot of interesting detail there and regarding how data is structured. I'd love to move on to the topic of the CQT token, which is the token within the Covalent ecosystem. Do you want to share what this CQT token is and what it incentivizes within the ecosystem?
Absolutely. So CQT stands for Covalent Query Token. So that's the governance and staking token that operates within the Covalent network. So the way this token works is it's the unit of accounting for the entire network. So if you think about this as the supply and demand side, on the demand side, we've made a conscious decision to not make CQT as a payment token. So it's not, I think payment tokens are a relic of the 2017-2018 era. It's no longer in fashion. So customers pay the network using just regular fiat or stable coins, so USDC, USDT. And the stable coin is then converted to CQT through a market buy mechanism and then distributed to the actors in the network who are fulfilling that request. So the query nodes that answer the API calls, they get a portion of the CQT. The indexers, they get a portion of the CQT, and so on. So that's really how CQT circulates on the economy. But on the outside, the API calls are indexed in fiat. So there's no variability or no fluctuations of the actual consumption of the protocol. And this is really important because we have a lot of enterprise customers, and enterprise customers are not going to hold on to CQT to pay for the services. And they want something that's more predictable, something they can budget for. So that's why we've designed it as a stable fiat equivalent on the demand side.
Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, I know recently, or at least last year, there were some issues around the Nomad hack for Covalent and the CQT token. So I'm wondering if you could share how that hack, or what were the results of that hack, and how the team has since moved past that time.
Absolutely. So Nomad hack would have been probably the most unfortunately eventful item from last year. So just some context here. The way CQT works is CQT is an ERC-20 token on Ethereum, but these cryptographic proofs that are submitted and published on chain are done on Moonbeam, which is another Polkadot L1 chain, because it's just a lot cheaper to submit these proofs on Moonbeam. But CQT, because it's a settlement token, it needs a representation on Moonbeam because all of the operators who run the network get paid in CQT. So we used Nomad as a bridge to bridge this ERC-20 token from Ethereum to Moonbeam. What happened, this would have been the 1st of August last year, is there was a bug on Nomad which caused the Ethereum side, the deposits on the Ethereum side, to just leak. So what that meant is every time you go and lock in one CQT on the Ethereum side, one mad CQT appears on the Moonbeam side, which is essentially a synthetic asset on the other side. So it's one-to-one conversion. But when CKT on the Ethereum side got stolen, then suddenly all the mad CKT on the Moonbeam side was unbacked. So there's just no value because there's no collateral on the other side that's backing it. So the hack amounted to about 10% of Covalent's entire supply, because this is all of the operators, everyone, just, you know, in order to stake and participate in the network, you have to bridge across. So there's about 10% of supply. So 10% of supply got stolen and immediately dumped on the market, and, you know, it crashed the price, and, you know, it's just really, really messy. Anyway, so we what we did is we figured out what to do. We the network didn't stop, by the way, right? So the proofs are still being submitted. Then the Covalent network just didn't stop. It's just this bridging mechanism just failed, and you cannot bridge it back because there's no collateral on this side. So anyways, what we did is we just sorted the wallets, and we paid out all of the people who've lost money through the bridge from the treasury. And I think that was the right thing to do. So basically, we did not dilute the supply. We didn't print more tokens or anything. We just gave it out from the supply. And so that's really how we dealt with it. So with the hack, that was one chapter. Now, the step that we move forward with is move to the wormhole bridge. So the wormhole bridge is something that's managed by Jump. It's a super secure bridge. Again, I should say that with a caveat, because it had a massive hack last year. Basically, there's like billions of dollars of bridge hacks last year, and Wormhole was one of them. But what Wormhole did is what Jump did is that immediately they backstopped that with capital. Anyway, so now the network is running with Wormhole. So it's, I think, WHOLE-CKT, which is the synthetic asset, which is now used as the settlement token on Moonbeam. So that's really how we've moved forward. So that chapter is done. You know, the Wormhole switchover happened in January of this year. The hack, you know, the people who lost money on the hack were paid from our treasury late last year. And phase two of the network is launching in a few months. So, you know, it's just onwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very glad to hear that. That is now in the past of Covalent, and lots of exciting things coming in the future. Speaking of the future of Web3 and Covalent, I would love to hear your opinion on what you envision as being the future of Web3 and how you make Covalent a part of that future.
Absolutely. So I think there's a couple of trends here that is really important. You know, whether you believe one is going to trump the other is a personal opinion. But personally, what I'm the reason I'm in this space is for people to own their data. And so far, what has happened over the past couple of decades is that these for-profit companies have started to hoard user data and profit that, essentially sell that to the lowest bidder or the highest bidder. And that needs to change, right? Companies now need to switch away from holding data as an asset, user data as an asset, to user data as a liability. So that's the world that I'm working towards. And the only way to build that is like a sovereign data architecture where your personal data never leaves the confines of your devices or your firewall if you're an enterprise. So that's really the world that you know, I the future that I believe will take part. And you can see the privacy laws all coming into effect, the CCPA, the GDPR, and so on, which is, you know, a little massage towards that direction, but the technology is just lacking today and the awareness is just lacking. So along with that, there's a couple of other things like self-custody of assets. There's a lot of, you know, talk about Bitcoin as the, you know, as a reserve currency. I'm not fully educated on the monetary policy aspects of crypto. I'm here for the technology. I'm a technologist. And so I'm not sure how much of that I believe. But fundamentally, I think Web3 is about user empowerment. And that's why I'm here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds very exciting and makes perfect sense. I would love to talk about data science, data analytics a little bit more specifically. So my experience, and as well as having spoken to many other people on the podcast, the world is going towards a place where data is mainstream. People need to have data analytics skills. People need to be able to interpret data and work with data, whether that's in fields in architecture, psychology, and other typical data-focused fields. So I'm wondering, based on your experience in your past employment and past startups, and additionally working with the Covalent team now for over a couple of years, I would like to know where you see data driving the future of Web3, and additionally, how current projects that are using Covalent can leverage these basically data-driven information, and even how Covalent uses perhaps their own services to better drive efficiency.
It's a great question. So the need for data has actually increased over the last couple of years. So think of data as controls in an airplane cockpit. You just can't fly blind anymore. It's too expensive. And the gut check is okay for the initial maybe prototype, but thereon you need to listen to users, you need to aggregate the data, you need to synthesize the data, you need to basically design your experiments around collecting the data, synthesizing the results, and creating actionable programs. So data is a key part of your day-to-day decision-making process. And I think it's just too slow, it's too risky to today build a project or take on an experiment without the data-backed insights. So that's how I think data is pretty key. Now, data to make data as data middleware and data for insights are different use cases of data. And so with a unified API, it's not really data to do for decision-making. It's just data as a raw ingredient for a user experience. Now, crypto products are super data-rich. So you think of even as a very simple like crypto portfolio tracker or NFT gallery. These are all like heavy, heavy, heavy data interfaces. So Covalent provides data for all of those interfaces. So in a portfolio tracker, for example, you have maybe three or four views. The first view is a list of all of your token balances. Now, this is a very expensive query on the back end, right? We make it very easy, but it is actually quite difficult because there's 200,000 plus ERC-20 tokens on Ethereum alone. So you need to scan all of those tokens, see your balances, and get the spot price. So all of those are data parts. Then the second phase might be the portfolio view, which is the historical value, the fiat value of your assets over the last 30 days. So now not only do you need your spot balances, you also need your historical balances and your historical fiat value of your assets before you can render this chart, this area chart of your portfolio. Then you need like market data, right? So if you're investing in, let's say, one of the AMM pools, the constant product pools like a Uniswap V2 or V3, you want to know what pools are active, what pools have the most liquidity, what pools have the highest APR, and then you need all that market information before you can invest in one of these pools. And not just the constant product, this could be balances, could be curve, could be any of the synthetic protocols. Then take NFTs. So that's just like the wallet interface. Take an NFT market, right? So you click on an NFT collection, you want to see the floor price. That's data. That's like a very expensive query in the backend. You click on a specific asset, a token, an actual NFT. You want to see all of the trades. You want to see the rarity calculator. You want to see what is the ownership structure. You want to understand if the price predictability is above or below the floor price. You want to understand. So all of this is data. So I think crypto products by default are super data rich. And that's just two use cases. If you look at the taxation use case, there's a lot going on here. If you look at how taxes are built, essentially you look at a very simple protocol like Compound, which accrues interest in the native asset every block. So every 13 seconds, there's interest accrued. So what you need to do is not only get the fiat value of your open position, but as you accrue your interest, you actually need the fiat value every block if you want to be like completely accurate. Most people just take the end of day balances, but there's no corresponding transaction on the blockchain that happens when you accrue interests. So you need to calculate all of that before you know what your liabilities are. And getting that wrong is actually quite troublesome. So that's another use case where data is like super heavy. So yeah, so data is everywhere, especially when it comes to blockchain data. It's all public, but...
Ganesh, I'd love if you'd be able to talk a little bit on the Data Alchemist program so our listeners can get some, you know, hands-on experience working with data and programming. If you could share a little bit about how this program works.
Absolutely. So the Data Alchemist program is something that I'm very proud of, something that we introduced to the community. The first Data Alchemist ran in, I think it was October of last year. And so here, we had an ambition of recruiting a few hundred people, teaching them SQL, teaching them the skills to slice and dice, essentially business metrics, right? So not just data, general purpose data, but data specifically to analyze a business. And this business could even be a protocol, on-chain protocol. And then not only that, we also paid these alchemists $2,000 to complete the bootcamp. So this was one of a kind where we pay people to complete the bootcamp. And so when we released this last year, I think over 1,500 people had applied, and the application process required a 1-minute video. So we went through thousands of 1-minute videos to get the right kind of candidates. And then I think about 250 people actually entered the bootcamp, and about 125 people actually graduated from the bootcamp. So that's really what the Data Alchemist program is. And it's a very vibrant community. You know, some of these guys, they've now found jobs in Web3. So it's like a feeder system into the blockchain ecosystem. So I think the next Data Alchemist program will be running sometime in the late April, May kind of time frame.
Sounds very exciting. And I'll also link the Data Alchemist program to the chat towards the end of the call. I'm wondering if you could speak to how the API, basically the paid service that you have provided over the years, has contributed to the success of the project. And additionally, if you could share how fundraising has been for the project over the past couple of years, some basic information around how many fundraising rounds there were, and whether that was a difficult or easy process, depending if that was during a bear market or a bull market.
Yeah, two great questions. So the first question is about the paid service. So the Covalent API has always been free and will always remain free. So we don't want to put up any barriers to entry for people who want to get into the system. So you can literally go to the Covalent website and sign up for an API key. You don't have to pay us a single dime. As of January of this year, we've introduced a paid tier. So some of the bigger customers had challenges relying on a free API. And I completely understand, if I wanted to rely on an API for my business, I would be hesitant to rely on a free API. I want to actually pay for the service. I want to make sure they're sustainable. So as of January of this year, we've introduced a paid tier. But this is, again, like a product-led growth. What that means is that you only have to pay for the API once you've crossed a certain usage threshold. If you don't cross the usage threshold, you don't have to pay a single dime. And all of the APIs that are available in the paid tier are also available in the free tier. There's no gating of any sorts. You can go build a completely fully sophisticated application. And as your application gets more and more successful, that's when you have to put in your credit card and pay for the service. So that's really what's happening with the paid service. Pretty excited to see that. I think that's very close to like product market fit. You know, we are starting to see more and more bigger customers now opening up their wallet. You know, people who had basically ignored Covalent because it was a free service are now coming back to Covalent because they love the brand and love everything that we do for the space, including the Data Alchemist program, the block specimen, and so on. So that's it's pretty exciting. I wish I'd known that people actually love paying for good products. Took me by surprise, but I'm glad I learned that lesson this year. With regards to the fundraising, for the first couple of years, we had bootstrapped the company, so no outside investors. Not because I'm a masochist or not because I have a huge ego. It's just that during a bear market, it was super hard. So this timeline is that the hackathon happened at the end of 2017. So when we went out to raise capital in 2018, We found nobody. Nobody was investing in blockchain startups. No one. There was no crypto. There was no Web3. There was no DeFi. There was no NFT. None of that stuff, right? So the use cases were not clear. Nothing was really, really clear. So it was. I would say it was more than just difficult to raise capital. We were not successful. It just was like not possible. So what we did is we did what any enterprising team would do. We made the company profitable. We went out and closed customers and asked them to pay for the API and so on. We closed some pretty major customers just as a bootstrap startup, and the company became profitable in by 2020. And since then, we've raised four or five rounds of capital. Once you hit the product market fit, once you have a certain space, like a spot in the industry, I think it gets easier to raise capital as you see more and more traction. So we have Coinbase, we have Binance, we have 1KX, we have Woodstock as participants on the network, and as these are all like token raises. So that's what's happened on the fundraising aspect. And a lot of these guys actually run the Covalent infrastructure today. So it's more than just the capital. It's also, buying into the mission and being in it for the long term. So that's a brief, fundraising story. Happy to answer any specific questions if they are.
No, I think that lays it out exactly what I was looking for. I'm also wondering, in your experience in the space for now quite some time, if there are certain skill sets that people have found particularly useful. So, for example, using SQL to query blockchain transactions, or if you have any personal recommendations for people who are interested in getting into the space themselves.
So I would take Web3 in the context of the broader tech industry. So the reason we called it Covalent is because it's that bond or that bridge between, say, decentralized systems and centralized systems. That's why the underlying stack is SQL. That's why the API is a REST API. Because if you think at scale, what happens is that people don't want to retool or retrain their people, right? They just want to adopt technologies. You know, any kind of bespoke technology is an adoption barrier. So I would put this in the context of a broader like data stack. And so you look at the modern data stack, you understand Snowflake, you understand columnar databases, you understand transaction databases, you understand data pipelines, you understand verifiable data, you understand cryptographic proofs. And those things are not specific to Web3 per se, right? They're broadly applicable, the zero knowledge proofs. Today, yes, they are based on blockchains, but in the future, any kind of state system will have a zero knowledge proof. So I would say if you want a future in the Web3 space, data engineering and data analytics, it's not specific to Web3. I think those skills are broadly applicable. You can pick up any web data like analytics course. In fact, in the Data Alchemist program that we run is not specific to Web3. It's just analyzing a business. It just so happens that all of the core metrics and the KPIs for a protocol is on-chain, so we happen to have all of that handy. So I would say that's my take, because the novelty of Web3 will not matter in a few years. It'll all like merge right in.
Do you have any interesting insights, guesses, or things you would like to share about Covalent, the future of the Web3 space, and what's next for Covalent's future?
So the Web3 space, let's talk about where the future is. So the future is determined by the use cases and the demand, right? So today we see three broad use cases where Web3 is starting to see traction. The first being DeFi. So your traditional fintech companies merging with DeFi protocols, and you're seeing a lot more of this, which the non-custodial assets. Robinhood adding Web3 wallets. A few days ago, I saw that the new Internet Explorer, the Edge browser from Microsoft, has a crypto wallet built in. So a lot's happening there with the fintech and DeFi. The second being NFTs. You can see all everything with loyalty cards and you know, brand awareness campaigns going through NFTs. If you understand Starbucks's business model, Starbucks sells a lot of coffee, yes, but they also have a financial services business where all of the float that customers have in the Starbucks card results in hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue. So that's moving on chain. So NFTs is a pretty big kind of deal. There we recently released a report, a data report on the Nike. It's called a Crypto Kicks campaign. There was over $1 billion of primary and secondary sales there. So that's pretty exciting. So NFTs are huge. And then GameFi is the third biggest thing. GDC happens to be running right now. And you can see a lot of exciting news coming out of GDC in the Web3 space. So there's definitely a lot of like AA, AAA studios looking to rebuild their underlying asset stack on blockchains and Web3. So that's another big use case that we see. And Covalent is just enabling technology. So these three areas is where we're investing heavily because that's where we see all the traction.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of the roadmap for Covalent, what's coming up in the next couple of months?
So it's a pretty exciting packed roadmap. We will have the Q1 product update in a few days. But essentially, there is three separate roadmaps, right? So one is on decentralized protocol. So phase one, the block specimen proofs and the specification was released last year. So that's been running for almost a year now. Phase two is going to be launched in the next couple of years. We're doing internal QA right now, which is a distributed tracing engine. So that's on the decentralized network. That is like pretty exciting. So, you know, half the network is now decentralized with phase two. On the API side, what we have is we've rebuilt a lot of our stack. So the balances endpoint is brand new. Our transaction endpoint is brand new. We have a pretty rich NFT set of endpoints coming out. So we've gone out and downloaded all of the NFT assets and the metadata and then thumbnailed all of the NFT assets. So done a lot of work there. We're building a new set of security endpoints. So with the wallets, what's happening today is that there's you want to warn people if you're trying to interact with a contract you haven't previously interacted with. There's like other kinds of use cases like token gating that's all coming out. So a heavy emphasis on new endpoints, new use cases, you know, just better, faster, cheaper on the API side. And then Increment, which is our, you know, data analytics. It's like types equal get charts. We have a pretty exciting, you know, data model coming out there, a new way to browse, you know, blockchain data. So that's pretty exciting. And then essentially all of these services are now going to be resold and available to all the RPC vendors. So if you go to Chainstack, if you go to Infura, you go to Quicknode in the next couple of weeks, you can go in and enable Covalent's API through those portals. So that, you know, it's just further distribution on our part, because it's not just a centralized protocol and everyone is buying into the vision of Covalent. So that's really what to expect for Covalent in the next coming months.
Wow, sounds like a lot. It sounds very exciting. I'll now open up the floor to any of our listeners to ask any questions they have. They're welcome to unmute themselves or drop a question in the Discord chats, which is just above the lounge. So yeah, we welcome you to ask any questions you may have. Okay, so we have a question here in the chat that says, how does Covalent ensure data accuracy and consistency across multiple blockchains?
Fantastic question. So one of the reasons of building the decentralized protocol is data verifiability. And so when we extract data from a blockchain, there are a couple of ways to do this. So typically what other data vendors do, including Covalent in the early days, is they go and hit an RPC endpoint. So if you want to extract the data from a block, what you need to do is make an RPC call for the block. And let's say there's like 200 transactions. So you need to make a call for every single transaction. And then you want to get all of the transaction receipts. So let's say there's on average 2 transaction receipts per transaction. That's 400 extra calls. So that's total about 600 calls before you can piece together the state of a block, right? And so what happens is that the blockchain is not static, right? There's always new data coming in and it's always evolving. The state always changes. Also, you have reorgs, you have all kinds of things going on in the node. And so there's no way to verifiably prove that the data that you've extracted through the 600 calls is what you would happen if you did the same kind of system like, you know, 10 minutes from now. So what Covalent has done is we've patched the node to extract this data as a single shot. So this is where the block specimen comes in. So the block specimen is this canonical normalized storage format. And because we've patched the node, you can extract the block and all of its constituent elements, including the transactions, the receipts, in one single call. So once it's extracted out, now the block specimen has, you can hash that block specimen and have a cryptographic proof. So if five people extract the block specimen for a specific block height, now you can run a consensus algorithm to ensure that the extraction process is consistent through a quorum across these five different operators. So that's really how we ensure the data accuracy.
Okay, thank you for that response. So with that said, Ganesh, it was great speaking with you today. I learned so much about blockchain infrastructure. It was great having you on the podcast, on the Discord channel today.
Fantastic, Ari. Thank you so much for the chance to share some insights. And feel free to reach out to me if you have any further questions.
Okay, thank you. And thanks, everyone, for attending today. Have a great day.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.